What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Primetime Sports Podcast, hosted by Joey Maiolari. So in today's episode, I'm going to talk about the Los Angeles Clippers and their struggles to begin the season. I'm going to talk about some stats that just show how much they've struggled, and then I'll also break down what I would do if I were the GM of the Los Angeles Clippers. So let's start off with the Clippers' record. They're currently 6-20, 6 wins, 20 losses, tied for the third worst record in the NBA. They are 3-18 over their last 21 games. They have not won a home game since Halloween, which is not false. That is a true fact. They have not won a home game since Halloween. They are averaging 111.3 points per game, which is fourth worst in the NBA. Also averaging just 40.6 rebounds per game, also fourth worst in the league. And also have a 119.1 defensive rating, fifth worst in the NBA. And a negative 5.6 net rating, which is 25th in the NBA. Just to compare, last year in the 2024-2025 season, the Clippers had the third best defensive rating in the NBA with a 109.4 defensive rating. And then in net rating, they had the fifth best net rating in the 24-25 season with a 4.9 net rating. This year, the Clippers have not been playing good defense. They've not been rebounding the ball well. They're not getting back well on defense. They're also struggling scoring the ball, especially bench scoring. This year, the Clippers have allowed opponents to shoot 39% from three, which is the worst in the NBA. To compare to last season, a much better defensive season for the Clippers, they allowed their opponents to shoot 35% from three, which was fifth best in the NBA compared to this year, 39% from downtown, which is the worst in the NBA to this point. The Clippers have also allowed 14.6 three-pointers made per game, which goes hand-in-hand with allowing 39% shooting from three. That 14.6 three-pointers made per game total is the fourth worst in the NBA. Really tough average there that they're obviously not scoring the ball well this year, and then they're also not playing good defense. In the 2024-2025 season, the Clippers allowed just 13 three-pointers made per game on average, which was ninth best in the league. This year, they've not been good forcing turnovers either, forcing just 13.7 turnovers per game, which is the fifth worst in the NBA. As for pacing, their pacing is not good at all. A 97.26 pace to begin the year, which is second worst in the league. Last year, they were not that quick necessarily pacing-wise. They were ninth worst in the NBA, but it was okay because they had a good scoring team. They were very good defensively, so playing with a slower pace didn't really make that much of a difference. They were playing to their own strength, and at the end of the day, that team was older last year, and now this year, they're even older than they were last year. But last year, it was an older Clippers team, so it made sense for them to not really play fast-paced. Playing slow-paced actually helped them a lot of the time. They were a very good defensive team, so they could always rely on that. That has not been the case this year. As I said, they've been really struggling on both sides of the ball. Rebounding has been a major issue. Like I just noted, they have the fourth least amount of rebounds per game in the NBA. To compare it to last year, the Clippers were a very good defensive rebounding team, a 73.4% defensive rebound percentage in the 24-25 season, which was number one in the NBA last season. So obviously that's been a big drop-off rebounds-wise, defense-wise, scoring-wise. You look at the bench, the Clippers bench, which is usually a strong suit for this team. They always have had good depth and good scores off the bench. That has not been the case this year for this team. The Clippers are averaging just 32.3 points per game off the bench, which is fourth least amount in the NBA. That is obviously not a good statistic there. They don't have really many strengths to really look at for this year. That's why they have a 6-20 record so far, 6 wins, 20 losses. They've had a lot of chances to win games. They've been in a lot of games late in the game, losing to Minnesota, losing to Houston, losing to the Lakers in games where they definitely had a chance in the fourth quarter. Right now, this season, they are 2-10 in clutch time, which is when the score is within 5 points in the final 5 minutes of regulation. The Clippers are 2-10, 2 wins, 10 losses, with a 167 win percentage in clutch time situations, the worst in the NBA. In those clutch time situations, the Clippers have a 123 defensive rating, which is sixth worst in the NBA. Last year, in clutch time, the Clippers' defense was very good, a 105.4 defensive rating, which was seventh best in the league last season. They also did win 19 games last year in clutch time. They were 19-18 overall in clutch time, so over 500. This year, they are 2-10 with a 167 win percentage. Rebounding, as I noted, has definitely decreased for the Clippers this season. If you look at their defensive rebound percentage last year in clutch time, they had a 70.2% defensive rebound percentage. This year, just a 68.8% defensive rebound percentage, which is 14th in the NBA in clutch time. So rebounding's been obviously on the decline. Defense overall has been on the decline. Scoring's been obviously hard to come by, and then also they've been battling injuries. They have three losses on the year to the Memphis Grizzlies, this team that was really struggling to get guys healthy and really have a lineup that they could put out there to compete. And somehow, some way, the Clippers found ways to lose to the Grizzlies three times. And that's what bad teams do. They find ways to lose any given night. Last night, Cam Spencer hit 7 threes for the Memphis Grizzlies. He always torches the Clippers. Last night was just another example. Spencer is now the 10th different player this season to make at least 6 three-pointers in a single game against the Clippers. The Clippers are now tied with the Atlanta Hawks for the most amount of times they have allowed an opposing player to hit at least 6 threes in a single game this year. So not a statistic or company that you want to be a part of there. Obviously, the Clippers are not really defending the three well, and that was something that they were good at last year, was just playing better all-around defense. That statistic there that I just mentioned came from Justin Russo on Twitter. And if you look at some of these stats from the players that the Clippers have had on the floor this year, James Harden's had a very good year statistically, 26 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists, shooting 38% from three. Harden has played in 25 out of 26 games. Kawhi Leonard has played in just 16 games this year, but he's been very good when he's been on the floor. 25 points a game, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 37% shooting from 3. Obviously, the 10 games he's missed has definitely hurt the Clippers, but when he has been on the floor, Kawhi and Harden have shown up and played good overall. I think James Harden at times has gotten a little bit lazy when it comes to rebounding on the defensive end. Saw a tough example of that last night where he kind of just let a rebound go, where Ivica Zubac and James Harden definitely had a chance to get the rebound. They didn't, and they let a Memphis Grizzly just rebound and go right back up for a layup. If I remember correctly, I think it was Cedric Howard, but I could be wrong about that. Another player the Clippers have missed this year is Derrick Jones Jr. He's missed 13 games on the year after suffering an injury in November against the Celtics. Brook Lopez has fallen out of the rotation, averaging just 5 points, 2 rebounds a game in 19 games played this year. He's a guy I thought was a great addition for the Clippers. I thought he could have been the X factor for this team, being a backup big man that was competent on both ends of the ball. But obviously that has not been the case here this year. He's been struggling, and he's also getting up there in age. He's 37 years old. The Clippers do have a very old roster. You look at it, Brook Lopez is 37 years old. Nick Batum's also 37 years old. Chris Dunn's 31. Bogdan Bogdanovic is 33. Chris Paul is 40 years old. Kawhi Leonard's 34, James Harden's 36, Bradley Beal's 32. This is a very old roster, and you're obviously seeing the effects of that when you watch the Clippers play any given night. And Brook Lopez, like I said, has obviously fallen out of the rotation and just did not look great, even in the minutes he got early this year. John Collins is averaging just 12 points and 5 rebounds a game, shooting 29% from three, which is definitely a decline compared to the production he had last year in Utah. It was obviously understood that he was going to have, you know, not as many scoring opportunities in LA this year with Kawhi Leonard, Bradley Beal, and James Harden. Even with Kawhi Leonard being out for 10 games this year and Bradley Beal only playing in 6 games, John Collins really didn't step up at all. He has struggled this year for the Clippers. Bradley Beal, who I just mentioned, only played in 6 games this season and is out for the rest of the year due to a fractured hip. Chris Paul played in just 16 games this year, averaging 3 points, 2 rebounds, and 3 assists. He was recently sent home 2 weeks ago on December 3rd, due to a fractured relationship between Chris Paul, the coaching staff, and the front office. A report came out today from Ramona Shelburne, and she noted that Jeff Van Gundy, an assistant coach for the Clippers, and Chris Paul had arguments over the Clippers' defensive alignment and what their coverage assignments were on the defensive end. It seemed like a rift started there between Jeff Van Gundy and Chris Paul, and then it probably just got more sour over time, it seems. When Chris Paul was let go, though, it was during a road trip. He was in his hotel room in Atlanta where the Clippers were playing the Atlanta Hawks that next night. And he was let go at 3 a.m. Eastern time, which is pretty crazy to let go of a player, you know, in the middle of the night. It seems like Chris Paul and Lawrence Frank had a conversation. Lawrence Frank is the president of basketball operations for the Clippers. They had a discussion in that hotel in Atlanta about where Chris Paul and the team stood. After that discussion was over with, It seems like the Clippers decide to let him go at 3 a.m. and decide to send him home. He is still under contract on the Clippers, and now that it is past December 15th, he is now trade eligible, which newly signed players over the summer, they are not trade eligible usually until December 15th. Now that's obviously passed, where Chris Paul could get sent to a new team, and we'll see what ends up happening, but it is pretty crazy to send a player home who is one of the best players all time in your franchise history, if not the best. An NBA great overall. And also you consider where he was at this point in his career. This was his farewell tour, the end of his NBA career. He wanted to be with the Clippers one last year, try to have a chance at a ring, and also go back home to the franchise where he spent so many years in LA and built a good chemistry with guys around him when he was in LA. Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, Jamal Crawford. Going back to LA for one more year was supposed to be a bittersweet moment there for Chris Paul, where obviously it's the end of his career, so it's definitely going to be sad for him playing his last year in the NBA, but it also was a nice thing to be able to spend that last year in LA, where he was a fan favorite for so many years and is an all-time great in the franchise's history. But to send him home at 3 a.m. on a road trip where the Clippers are really struggling, it seems like the relationship must have gotten so sour that Frank had no option but to let go of Chris Paul. And according to reports today, Chris Paul did try to go back. You know, after they had that conversation, he tried to mend things with the Clippers and stick around. But it seems like Chris Paul's rift with the coaching staff was only the start of them having more issues as the season went on. And then obviously he didn't play in some games. And even in the games he did play in, for some games, he had limited minutes. So there was a rift between the coaching staff and Chris Paul, and it ended up resulting in him being let go. Still, as I said, under contract. So the Clippers could potentially move him at some point. I'm sure they probably are going to discuss a potential destination for him that he wants to go. Maybe they'll give him the opportunity to talk to other teams and see which team would be interested in trading with Chris Paul. And then in that case, maybe the Clippers can move him. This is a very difficult situation and obviously brought a lot of criticism towards the Clippers to see them treat Chris Paul the way they did, especially letting him go at 3 a.m. during a road trip. I just don't feel like that's really the best time to let go of a player. So I do see the side of many fans where they're upset with the way they treated Chris Paul. At the end of the day, Chris Paul is a competitor, and he's always been an outspoken player in the locker room and always had a relationship with coaches, it seems, in the past, where he could definitely give input on defensive coverages and certain plays that they should run on the offensive end. So the Clippers obviously knew what they were getting into when they signed Chris Paul this offseason. Chris Paul's always been an outgoing player and a player that's not afraid to speak up to the coaching staff when he sees something that should be changed. In this case, though, there was a specific moment where the Clippers are playing the Dallas Mavericks this year where Kawhi Leonard was having a tough time keeping up with Klay Thompson, and Chris Paul went up to him during a timeout and tried to say that he should maybe switch with somebody else and not cover Klay Thompson anymore, and that did spark a rift between Jeff Van Gundy and Chris Paul. So that was only the beginning of the end there for him in LA. Just a really tough situation. I do think it's definitely not the best idea to let go of a player at 3 a.m. on a road trip, especially an all-time franchise great. And then you add in the fact that this was his retirement tour and his last year in the NBA, where he chose to sign with the Clippers as a free agent and be a contributor off the bench. Obviously, things went downhill for the Clippers this year, and there was definitely an issue between Chris Paul and the coaching staff, and that, as I said, did result in him being let go. Like I noted, I don't think they should have let him go at 3 a.m. At the end of the day, I do think Chris Paul and his best years were past him, but that's something that everybody knew heading into this year, that Chris Paul was not going to be the prime Chris Paul he's been in the past. But the expectation was he would come off the bench and be a contributor for the Clippers and be a good player like he was last year for the San Antonio Spurs, a reliable backup point guard that can make plays and play make for guys around him and be a leader. I do think it's tough, though, when you look at this team, where the Clippers are at right now. When you let go of Chris Paul, they did win a game after that in Atlanta. Maybe people thought potentially that the Clippers could turn things around, and then obviously things just went downhill after that. It didn't spark a win streak at all for this team. Just things continue to get worse for this Clippers team, and I really do see them at rock bottom. You take the Chris Paul situation and the way they treated him, which brought a lot of backlash towards the Clippers franchise, and then you add in the fact that they're really struggling this year, 6 wins and 20 losses, and then you also add in the fact that they have a tough situation around them right now, where they were accused of potentially circumnavigating the salary cap by Kawhi Leonard being paid by a separate company known as Aspiration. We'll see what ends up happening there with the FBI's investigation, but obviously there's a lot going on with the Clippers right now, and none of it being good. They have had some injuries around them this year, but the injuries are not the main issue here for the Clippers. Bradley Beal obviously being out for the rest of the year was not easy. Derrick Jones Jr. missing 13 games has been tough. Bogdan Bogdanovic has missed 14 games this season. So that's obviously not great. The injuries have definitely been a problem for this Clippers team. But at the end of the day, it seems like there's something broken with this Clippers team, whether it's the locker room, whether it's the players giving up, whether it's something with coaching, whether it's something with management. There is something wrong here with this Clippers team. And it's not just the injuries. The Clippers returned most of their roster from last season, a roster that took the Denver Nuggets to seven games, who ended up taking the champion Oklahoma City Thunder to seven games as well. Like, this Clippers team was very talented last year, brought back most pieces heading into this year, besides Norman Powell, which was definitely a tough move, letting him go in a trade. Other things have gone wrong as well, though. It's not just losing Norman Powell and all his production and all his hustle. Bradley Beal's injury has been tough. Chris Paul's issues with management and coaching. Brook Lopez looks washed. The aspiration rumors with Kawhi Leonard, I really do think, spiraled this team out of control and brought a lot of negative outlook for the Clippers heading into this season, and definitely wasn't the attention that you want. That's a lot of negative attention around your team. And you look at this roster, they were a very old roster, the oldest roster in NBA history heading into the season, if I remember correctly. So you also add that in. There weren't really high expectations by some people for this Clippers team because of how old they were, and they were getting criticized about their age, heading into the year. So there's just been a lot of negative noise around this Clippers team heading into the year. And it's really a culmination of everything. A lot of things have affected this team. That's why I feel like there could be something wrong in the locker room, maybe a culture issue potentially, because there was so much talent on this roster this year, and just it's really not panned out at all. And I know age is an issue, and that's definitely a valid point. But at the same time, they're in so many games in clutch time, and they're just not getting the job done. And maybe it's a chemistry issue. Maybe it's players just starting to give up. Maybe it's, you know, the injuries being factored in as well, or all of the potential distractions around this team with Chris Paul, Kawhi Leonard, and some of the other things I mentioned. It's just disappointing to see, especially considering the Clippers have had so much talent around them, not just this year, but even in past seasons, which has helped the Clippers have 14 consecutive winning seasons, the longest active streak in the NBA. Their desire to win has been commendable, just like their ability to keep this competitive window alive, but it has finally caught up to them, where they're in a really tough situation. They don't own their draft pick in 2026. It's fully owned by the Oklahoma City Thunder. They don't own their pick outright in 2027. The Oklahoma City Thunder have swap rights to that pick. 2028, that pick is owned outright by the Philadelphia 76ers. And then in 2029, the Sixers also own a pick swap with the LA Clippers. So the Clippers don't own any of their draft picks in the next four drafts. And they also have an aging team that's 6 wins, 20 losses. They're in a really tough spot. And I know there's a lot of talk about the Clippers maybe potentially putting a package together and going to trade with the Brooklyn Nets and getting Michael Porter Jr. for a salary filler and potentially 2 first-round picks in 2030 and 2032. I don't think that's really the best idea for this Clippers team where they currently stand. At one point, I did think it was a good idea to trade for DeMar DeRozan when it was earlier in the season. The Clippers were around 3 wins and 8 losses. I said, okay, maybe in the next couple weeks, if things continue to spiral out of control by the first week of December, the Clippers will still have a potential chance to make the playoffs, which they technically right now where they stand, they still do have a chance at making the playoffs as a play-in team. They're right now 4.5 games back of the last play-in spot in the Western Conference. But back then, when I thought the Clippers could trade for DeRozan, they still had a lot of season left to go. There were some injuries, like Kawhi Leonard being out, where I thought, okay, once Kawhi Leonard gets back and Derrick Jones Jr. gets back at some point later down the line, the Clippers are going to figure things out and maybe potentially try to string things together. But once the Clippers got to be around 3-10 or 4-10, whatever it was, I started to really lose hope with each loss. And now where they stand right now, I do not think it's a smart decision to trade for Michael Porter Jr. I don't think it's a smart idea to mortgage any future draft picks for this team where they currently stand. I also don't think it's a smart decision to even trade for DeMar DeRozan, because I think where this team is right now, it just seems like it's irreparable. Yes, Oklahoma City is going to have a top 4 pick this year from the LA Clippers, but in the event the Clippers rebuild and get rid of their current assets, like my current plan for them is, they would be in a better spot for the future. At the end of the day, the Clippers have to look at it economically. They have a situation where there's a lot of sunk costs that they can't get back, like all of the draft picks they gave in the SGA trade for Paul George. That's a trade that a lot of GMs would have made at the time, because you're getting Paul George, who is a top 3 MVP candidate that season in the 2018-2019 season. And then you also do land as well Kawhi Leonard in free agency, who was the finals MVP and carried the Toronto Raptors to the franchise's first ring that year. So they're getting an MVP from the NBA Finals, and then a top three MVP from the regular season. And when you make that move, it definitely takes a lot of guts to make that trade because you know you're mortgaging basically all of your future and giving up a lot of assets to try to win right now, which it really didn't work out for the Clippers, and it's disappointing to see, but I do respect their decision to go all in. Sometimes when you're in that position, it's very tempting to say, you know what, I'll hold all my draft picks and hold my young players, and maybe hopefully everything pans out. But when you can get a proven player like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, which it was basically a package deal where Kawhi Leonard said he'd go to LA if the Clippers were able to land Paul George in a trade, the Clippers obviously ended up doing that. And now when you look at it in hindsight, it was a very tough move. You basically handed the Oklahoma City Thunder a potential dynasty. Right now, they have one ring down and probably could win another one this year as well. With the way they've been playing, they've been the best team in the NBA, so we'll not be surprised to see them win. But now they're also adding a top four pick probably this year in 2026, and then they own swap rights with the Clippers in 2027. I think the Clippers front office is a little bit nervous where they stand right now because they don't want to completely give up on this year and trade off their assets and then basically give Oklahoma City a top four overall pick that's probably going to be guaranteed by the way the Clippers are playing. I know it comes down to the ping pong balls and, you know, the luck of the draw, but the way the Clippers are playing, they're going to have very high odds at a potential top four pick. So I know the Clippers front office is probably worrying about that. They don't want to really give up right now and trade all of their current assets and basically offload all their talent and give Oklahoma City a very high pick. Their hope is to potentially bounce back and maybe not give Oklahoma City a top four pick, instead give them a top 10 pick. But the way I see it at the end of the day is, you're already going to give Oklahoma City a very high pick. This is a franchise that has so many draft picks to work with in future seasons as well, where even if you give them the 10th pick, they could trade up and get the number two or the number three pick if they wanted to. In the event they do that, who knows? But where the Clippers stand right now, I do not think it makes sense to say, hey, we don't want to give them a top four pick, so let's keep this team fully together and limit the chances of Oklahoma City getting a top four pick. I just don't think it's smart to say, we don't want to give them the best chances at a top four pick, so let's keep this roster together and potentially mortgage our future even more by trying to save a season that already feels lost with 6 wins and 20 losses. I just don't think that makes sense. There's some cost here. It's better to recover and gain some assets to work with in the future. It'd be smart for the Clippers to retool and rebuild. Those draft picks are already gone. The draft pick in 2026 and 2028 are owned by Oklahoma City and Philadelphia respectively, and then each of those teams have swap rights respectively in 2027 and 2029. It just doesn't make sense to say, let's keep this team completely together, and rather than give them a higher chance at a top four pick, we'll give them maybe a top eight pick and keep all of these assets. I don't think that makes sense. I think it makes more sense with the Clippers to say, you know what, we're going to give them a really good chance at top four pick, which they have a really good chance right now. The Clippers have the third worst record in the NBA. So right now, even with the current roster being all together, the Oklahoma City Thunder have a real high chance of getting a top pick. That's already a sunk cost. That's already in the past. The Clippers cannot recover that pick. They cannot rewind time. They can't go backwards no matter what they do. But my main argument, and I'm going to reiterate yet again, I don't think it's smart to say where we stand right now, the Oklahoma City Thunder own a top four pick, and we want to limit the chances of them getting a top four pick. So instead, let's invest more of our draft capital from the future in this team right now and try to give them, rather than a top four pick, give them a top eight pick. Like, at the end of the day, this already seems like a lost season for the Clippers. I don't think that's smart to do. Where they currently stand right now, the Oklahoma City Thunder probably already have a really good chance of getting a top four pick, and that's even with the Clippers keeping their roster fully together right now. I think it would make sense to say, you know what? We already know it's a lost cause. This season's already been gone for the Clippers. Their chances of making the playoffs are very, very, very slim the way they stand right now with 6 wins and 20 losses. Let's give up on this year. Let's trade our assets right now and try to recoup some future assets in return. And even though, like I noted, they're giving Oklahoma City a higher chance at getting a top pick, that's something that they really can't control at the end of the day. Oklahoma City, the way things stand right now, are already in a good landing spot to add even more talent to their lineup this coming June in the NBA draft. But I know the Clippers probably worry about that, because if you're giving them a top four pick this year and they own the swap rights in 2027, it makes that trade look even worse. But at the end of the day, vision's always going to be 2020 in hindsight. You can't go backwards. I do think it's best right now for the Clippers to recoup some assets and have some financial flexibility to spend big in free agency, whether it's this offseason or the next one. There is no doubt the Clippers need to get younger. They need to get more athletic. I think having a new nucleus, a new lineup, maybe even revamp completely and get a new coaching staff at some point. I think Ty Lue is a very good coach, but with the way the Clippers are playing right now, with 2 wins and 10 losses in clutch time and a 6-20 record overall, I think it may be smart for Clippers just to completely restart at some point and potentially clear house. I do think Ty Lue is a good coach, like I said, but right now with the way the Clippers are playing, I don't think anyone's job should be deemed safe, whether that's a player on the team, you know, staying rather than being traded, or the coaching staff, or potentially Lawrence Frank in the front office. Like, I don't think anybody's job should be completely deemed safe the way things stand right now. The Clippers are at a 6-20 record, the third worst record in the NBA. I would say they're at rock bottom. 3 wins and 18 losses in the last 21 games, with 3 losses to the Memphis Grizzlies this year. I think this team's at rock bottom right now. There is no doubt that the Clippers are going to need to shake things up at some point. Whether or not they do that, who knows? But I do think they need to very much consider recouping some assets and offloading some of this year's talent to try to build and begin a potential rebuild for the future. And this won't be a long rebuild where it's like an 8-year process, I don't think. Like, the Clippers have a lot of money coming off the books within the next season and change. After the 2026-2027 season is over with, the Clippers are going to have a lot of financial flexibility to add anybody they want in free agency. So I don't think this is going to be a long-time rebuild. I do think it'd be very smart to recoup some assets right now and honestly trade most of the roster right now and get future draft capital back, and then also some talent that they can potentially build around for the future. With all of those max slots potentially opening up in a couple seasons, I think the Clippers could be in a very good spot 2 or 3 years down the line. I don't think this is necessarily going to be an 8 or a 10 year rebuild, which it very well could be. That could always happen. You never know how things are going to shake out. But I do think the Clippers would be very smart to start their rebuild right now, recoup some assets, and then plan for a year or two down the line in free agency, whether that's the summer of 2026 or the summer of 2027, going all in via trade or adding a big time free agent in free agency. So now I'm going to shift over to what I would do if I were the general manager of the Los Angeles Clippers. And like I already noted, a quick preview and a quick foreshadowing of what I'm going to break down right now. It's going to be the Clippers completely breaking down this roster and getting basically rid of 12 of the players that are under contract and on the roster right now. So this would be a complete rebuild and a complete retooling for this year. It would be a very much a new look Clippers team for the rest of the season. And this is if I were the general manager of the Clippers. I know this would be very difficult to do, and it's tough at the end of the day to give up all of this talent like Kawhi Leonard, like James Harden. But I think if the Clippers want to be smart about their future, it makes a lot of sense to start the rebuild right now and recoup some assets. So let's start off with my first trade. And this is between the Los Angeles Clippers and the Miami Heat. I would have the Clippers sending James Harden, Nick Batum, and Bradley Beal in exchange for Tyler Herro, Simone Fontecchio, a 2026 first-round pick from Miami, and a 2029 first-round pick swap from the Miami Heat. And in this trade, the Clippers would get Tyler Herro back in return, who has another year left on his contract at $31 million a year. To get an expiring contract in Fontecchio, add a first-round pick in 2026, and also a first-round pick swap in 2029. And then on the other side, the Miami Heat would be getting James Harden to play next to Bam Adebayo, who I think would be very good in pick-and-roll with James Harden. You'd also have Khalil Ware be a lob threat next to James Harden. You'd have Norman Powell and Andrew Wiggins. They're scoring threats as well next to Harden. You'd have Nick Batum as a guy off the bench who would be a very good glue guy for that team. I think he fits definitely the Heat culture, a guy that hustles and gives it his all every possession. And then Bradley Beal does have an option for next year in the 2026-2027 season. He's included in this deal to really just make the money work. And maybe he'd be a Heat for next year, but probably unlikely. But in this trade, the Clippers would get Tyler Herro back, who, as I mentioned, has another year left after this season's over with at $31 million. And then adding in those draft assets, a first-round pick and a swap, the Clippers would definitely be happy with. If the Clippers didn't want a player of Tyler Herro's caliber back in return for James Harden, they would probably get more draft capital back in return. But in this deal and where the Clippers stand right now, I think getting a younger player back like Tyler Herro, who can go out and get a bucket for you at any given moment, would be good for this team to potentially build around. Now moving on to the next trade, I have a trade between the Celtics and the Clippers. The Clippers would be sending Ivica Zubac, Derek Jones Jr., and Chris Dunn to the Boston Celtics in exchange for Anthony Simons, Nemeas Keita, Jordan Walsh, a 2026 first-round pick, and a 2031 first-round pick. Zubac still has two more years left after this season is over with at $18.1 million a year. Derek Jones Jr., Chris Dunn, both will be free agents after one more season, so they are still under contract for the 2026-2027 season, getting $10 million a year for Derek Jones and then $5.4 million a year for Chris Dunn. On the other side, Anthony Simons is on an expiring contract at $27.6 million, so that would be basically over with after the end of this season. Nemeas Keita would have one more year left at $2.3 million. Jordan Walsh would also have one more year left on his deal after the season's over with at $2.2 million. And then the Clippers would be getting two draft picks as well, a 2026 first-round pick and a 2031 first-round pick. And a lot of these trades, I prioritize the Clippers getting some draft picks that are first-round picks for 2026 because I think the Clippers are probably going to have a younger roster heading into next year. So maybe potentially having a lot of draft picks to work with in 2026, having four first-round picks potentially could give them a chance at potentially landing a top player in this year's draft, with this being a draft class that's definitely getting a lot of hype and a lot of praise. It could be a good thing for the Clippers to have a lot of draft picks to work with in this year's draft, and maybe they could potentially trade up if none of those picks end up being high picks. Like a note, the Clippers don't own their pick for this year. That's owned by the Thunder, and the Thunder, no matter what you trade there, they probably would never give that up. But in this trade, the Clippers would be getting an expiring contract in Anthony Simons, so that it freed up money on the books. That also be getting Keita to be a backup center, and Jordan Walsh, who's been playing very well this year, a guy that's shown a lot of promise on each side of the ball this year for the Celtics, has really grown into his own, and still younger as well. And then you'd be getting two draft picks as well to potentially work with. And then in exchange, as I said, the Celtics would be getting Ivica Zubac to be their starting center. And this is a Celtics team that surprised a lot of people this year. They're playing good basketball, and Zubac could be their center for the future. He still, as I said, has two more years left under contract after this year's over with. And then you'd get some glue guys in Derek Jones Jr., Chris Dunn, who are very good defensive players. And then you'd have a potential lineup with Jason Tatum maybe later in the season potentially returning. I'm not sure if that's likely, but if you land these three guys and Jason Tatum's coming back by the end of the year, the Celtics could potentially make a run in the Eastern Conference. They've been playing very well without Jason Tatum this year. And if Tatum's healthy enough by the end of the year and the Celtics are in a position to potentially contend in the Eastern Conference, maybe he could potentially ramp up his recovery and try to get back out on the floor by the end of the regular season. Not sure if that's the case. If I were the Celtics, to be honest, I would not do that. I think it would be smart for them to maybe just let Tatum wait until next year and be fully recovered for the 26-27 season. But we'll see how things end up going. But in this trade, the Clippers would be getting some draft capital to work with. And then also playing Anthony Simons, who would be a good scorer, I feel like, on a playoff team in this trade. If this were to be a trade the Clippers make, I could see the Clippers shipping out Anthony Simons to a different team after this deal was made to potentially get more draft capital. But as I look at this trade right now, and as I'm recording this episode, I do think the Clippers would be able to get another draft pick back from the Celtics in this trade. If you're giving up Ivica Zubac, who still on the younger side, just 28 years old, and a very good defensive player, and then you're also giving two glue guys in Derek Jones Jr. and Chris Dunn, and the Celtics are really only giving up an expiring contract in Anthony Simons, a backup center in Nemeas Keita, and Jordan Walsh, who has been very good to begin this year, I do think the Clippers could do better than just a 2026 first-round pick and a 2031 first-round pick, maybe potentially get a pick swap in another future season. The Celtics do have a draft pick in 2030, maybe get a pick swap in 2030 and a 2031 first-round pick that I already mentioned. I think with this deal, if you're getting Zubac, Derek Jones Jr., Chris Dunn, you're only giving up an expiring contract in Anthony Simons, Nemeas Keita, Jordan Walsh, and you're only giving up a first-round pick in 2026, which will probably be a bottom 10 first-round pick, and then also giving a 2031 first-round pick that's unprotected. I do think the Clippers could do better than that in a trade for Zubac, and this is just me. After I already made these trade packages and did all my prep for this episode, I didn't realize that until I started recording it, that now that I look at this trade, I think the Clippers could maybe add in a pick swap as well in 2030. So let's add that in. We'll say Anthony Simons, Nemeas Keita, Jordan Walsh, a 2026 and a 2031 unprotected first-round pick, a 2030 first-round pick swap, all of that going to the Clippers in exchange for Ivica Zubac, Derek Jones Jr., and Chris Dunn. Zeus still under contract for another 2 seasons at just $18 million a year. For an all-defensive player in the NBA, a guy that's averaging 16 points and 11.5 rebounds, who's only 28 years old and would still be under contract, like I said, for 2 more years to line up with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown for another 2 years, I think the Clippers could potentially talk the Celtics into giving another draft pick. So that's why I'm going to add in the 2030 first-round pick swap into this trade. And the reason I would trade Zoo right now from the Clippers is because right now he's 28 years old, still a good player, like I noted, but he's probably your best asset in respect to age and where he is right now and the point in his career, and he's still a very productive player. I think it would make sense for them to potentially try to maximize the assets that they could get back for him. In my opinion, it just makes sense to sell high on Zoo right now. If they can get an offer that blows them away, like 2 first-round picks and a first-round pick swap with, you know, a couple of young players to maybe build around in Anthony Simons, who they could potentially ship out and get more draft capital for, I think it's a trade that the Clippers would have to definitely consider. Whether or not they do that, who knows? I actually don't think the Clippers are going to make any of these moves. I think they're going to hold still at least for another month or so and keep James Harden and Kawhi Leonard around to see if they could potentially put together a miraculous comeback on the season. I don't see them putting a comeback together, but I also don't see the Clippers making all of these moves right now. These are just basically the moves I would make. I know a lot of these moves are tough moves, and I know some of these trade packages might not be what a player ends up being traded for at the end of the day. This is just all what I think the players would be worth in a potential trade with another team. A lot of it comes down to how much money they're making, how old they are, what that team that's getting them needs, what the team that's trading for them also has to offer in return. At the end of the day, it's really hard to foreshadow what these guys would be traded for. These are just trade packages I made for fun that I think that these players would be valued at in a deal with other teams. And one last thing I want to mention about that Zubats trade. Zoo was a top 8 center in the NBA last year, a very good player, and was an all-defensive selection. It was a big reason the Clippers had a very good year last year where there were lower expectations around the Clippers when Paul George left in free agency. Zoo really stepped up and was the anchor for that team and has been the main center and the main big man for this team ever since the Clippers landed him in a trade with the Los Angeles Lakers. But I do think it may make sense to sell high on him and recoup as much assets as they can get back in return. Now moving on to the next trade, and this is between the Detroit Pistons and the Los Angeles Clippers. I have the Clippers sending Kawhi Leonard and Brook Lopez to Detroit in exchange for Tobias Harris, Isaiah Stewart, Ron Holland II, and a 2026 first-round pick that's unprotected from Detroit, a 2028 first-round pick that's unprotected from Detroit, a 2027 first-round pick swap, which would give the Clippers the right to swap, and a 2027 second-round pick via Brooklyn or Dallas, and a 2027 second-round pick via Detroit. So in this trade, the Pistons would be getting Kawhi Leonard, who has 1 more year left on his current deal after the season's over with, and that's a $50 million for the 26-27 season. And then Brook Lopez has 1 more year left on his current deal at $8.7 million for next year. The Clippers would be getting Tobias Harris, who is an expired contract at $26.6 million for the season. He'll be a free agent after this year's over with. So there's some financial flexibility there for the Clippers by getting an expiring deal back. They'd also get Isaiah Stewart in return, who has 2 years left at $15 million a year, and Ron Holland, who has 2 years left at $8.6 million a year. So they'd be getting a young player in Ron Holland, a center to be their starting center in Isaiah Stewart, who would bring a lot of toughness to this lineup that the Clippers are missing. And then they'd also be getting 2 unprotected first-round picks, a first-round pick swap, and 2 second-round picks. I think this would be a very good deal for the Clippers. And I do think, even though James Harden's having a better year for the Clippers right now, I think Kawhi Leonard's ceiling is higher than James Harden. When Kawhi Leonard is healthy, he's a top 10 player in the NBA. He showcased that in some of the playoff games last year against Denver, where he was ridiculous and could not miss and basically willed the Clippers to victory on his own. Before I made these trade packages, I thought Kawhi Leonard in a trade could maybe get you a first-round pick and a swap. But then I started thinking about it more and more, and when I started making these trade packages, I realized I think you can net a good return for Kawhi Leonard, because when he is healthy, and I know that's a gamble whether or not he'll be healthy, when he is healthy, he's one of the best players in the NBA still. And I think a team like the Detroit Pistons, who could use another scorer and a guy that has been there before and won multiple NBA Finals rings, it could make sense to add a veteran to their lineup in a cost that isn't that crazy at the end of the day. They'd be giving up a first-round pick in 26 and 28 and a swap in 27 with 2 seconds as well in 27, an expiring contract in Tobias Harris, a young player in Ron Holland who has shown improvements this year, a guy maybe they don't want to necessarily give up on, but if you're getting Kawhi Leonard, they'd probably have to part ways with him. And they'd also be giving up Isaiah Stewart. In return, as I said, they'd be getting Brook Lopez to maybe be their backup big man to replace Isaiah Stewart. I do think Stewart, though, if you were on this Clippers team, I think he'd be in their starting lineup. He's only 24 years old. He's still young. He's been in the NBA now for 6 seasons. A productive player in his career, averaging 9 points and 7 rebounds a game. I do think he'd bring a lot of hustle and passion to this Clippers lineup that they need. He'd bring a toughness as well and plays with a chip on his shoulder. I think he'd be a good return in this trade for the Clippers. And then you add in the draft capital and a young player, Ron Holland, who I'm high on as well. I think this would be a good move for the LA Clippers. And then in respect for the Pistons, like I said, they'd be adding an all-star caliber player in Kawhi Leonard, who still could be the best player on the floor any given night, and a backup big man in Brook Lopez. Now moving on to a smaller trade, and this would be Bogdan Bogdanović being traded to the San Antonio Spurs in exchange for Kelly Olynyk, a 2026 second-round pick via Utah, and this would be coming from the San Antonio Spurs, a 2028 second-round pick via New Orleans from the San Antonio Spurs, and a 2028 second-round pick via Minnesota from the Spurs. In this trade, Bogdan Bogdanović would be going to the Spurs. He has 1 year left on his deal after the season is over with at $16 million. And then Kelly Olynyk is on an expiring contract at $13.4 million for the season. In this trade, the Clippers would be getting 3 second-round picks, which would replenish their current second-round pick inventory. And they'd also be getting some money off the books with an expiring contract for Kelly Olynyk. Bogdanović could be a good scorer off the bench for the Spurs. He has battled some injuries this year for the Clippers, and that's definitely been tough not having him in the lineup. But in this trade, the Spurs are in a good position right now to contend to the Western Conference. Adding a guy like Bogdanović to potentially be a threat off the bench to shoot the three and score could be a good move for this team. I think adding to that bench is important, especially when you get to the playoffs. I could see them adding Bogdan Bogdanović in a trade with the Clippers. And then on the Clippers side of this move, like I just mentioned, adding some second-round picks to work with and an expiring contract in Olynyk to get some money off the books would be a good move for the Clippers. And now moving on to the last trade I want to mention, and that's between the Clippers and the Atlanta Hawks. In this trade, the Clippers would be sending John Collins, who has a $26.5 million expiring contract, back to his old home in Atlanta, where he played for many years. He'll also be traded with Kobe Brown, who is on an expiring $2.6 million contract, and Chris Paul, who is on an expiring $2.2 million contract to the Atlanta Hawks. Collins, Brown, and Paul all going to Atlanta in exchange for Kristaps Porzingis, who is on an expiring $30.7 million contract, alongside a 2029 second-round pick via Cleveland, a 2030 second-round pick via Atlanta, and then a 2031 second-round pick via Atlanta as well. In this trade here, the Clippers would be getting 3 second-round picks to replenish their draft capital. They'd also be getting Porzingis, who's on an expiring contract. So in this deal, every single player is on an expiring contract. So money will be coming off the books each and every way in this trade. But the Clippers will be getting 3 second-round picks in this move. And Porzingis right now, unfortunately, is battling some health issues, the same health issues he battled last year in the end of his tenure in Boston. When I first made this trade, I had the Clippers getting just 2 second-round picks in Porzingis in this deal, but I added another second-round pick in 2031 to make this deal work because I feel like there's definitely a question of whether or not Porzingis will be healthy enough to play the rest of this season. And the way things stand right now, he's not playing for Atlanta because of the health condition he's battling. So I think the Clippers, if they made this move, would want another second-round pick in return. And the main reason I say that is because I feel like the Clippers, if they did get Porzingis in a trade and he was healthy, they would try to ship him elsewhere and just redirect KP to somewhere else to get more draft picks back in return. But with him being unhealthy, and there's definitely a question mark of whether or not he could play the rest of the season, I think the Clippers would want another second-round pick in this trade, and that's why I added one in 2031. And then you look at the Hawks side of this trade, they'd be getting John Collins, who hasn't really been great this year for the Clippers, but he had a lot of success in Atlanta in the past, was good last year for Utah as well. He's a guy that can score off the bench and be a guy that can shoot the three ball for Atlanta, a team that can contend in the Eastern Conference. You'd also add in Chris Paul to be a backup point guard off the bench and maybe even be a guy that has a bigger role if Trae Young continues to be hurt. And then you'd also have Kobe Brown as a guy that could potentially get some spot minutes off the bench in defensive situations. Brown's a guy that has shown some flashes even this season. He's a guy that I've stayed with through the ups and downs. I know we had a tough night last night for the Clippers, but I do think Kobe Brown can be a good player in this league, and I hope he gets a bigger role somewhere else in the future. But as I said, in this trade, the Clippers will be getting 3 second-round picks and Porzingis in return for Collins, Brown, and Chris Paul. Atlanta, I think, would like to make this move because at the end of the day, they don't know what they're going to get out of Porzingis the rest of the season. And when you can get two assets that can help you right now in John Collins and Chris Paul, and a guy, Kobe Brown, that may be a guy that can help you out off the bench, depending on what Coach Snyder wants to do with his lineup any given night, I think this move makes a lot of sense there for Atlanta. When you don't know what you're going to get out of Porzingis the rest of this year health-wise, it may make sense for Atlanta to take Porzingis and a few draft picks and trade him to get some healthier players that they know can help them the rest of the season. They're in a good position right now to contend in the Eastern Conference. I know this year has not been as great of a start to the year as they wanted, but they are still a good team, Atlanta. I do think there is definitely concern on their end about Porzingis and his health. So if they could maybe package him with some draft capital to get some strong rotation players back in return, I think they could end up doing that. So that's why I made this move here for Atlanta. With all that being said, Chris Paul would obviously, I think, have to sign off on where he goes, even though that's not necessarily in his contract. I think the Clippers would try to make things at least a little bit better and maybe see if there's a team he wants to be traded to. In the event that he wants to get traded to Atlanta, I think he could potentially have a role off the bench. And with Trae Young missing some games now with some injuries, maybe Chris Paul could have a bigger role for that Hawks team. So all in all, after all these trades are made, the Clippers would only have 4 players returning from their current roster, and that would be Jordan Miller, Kobe Sanders, Yannick Kona-Niederhauser, YKN for short, and then Cam Christie. And all of these guys are the youngest players on the roster. Jordan Miller is 25, Kobe Sanders is 23, YKN's 22, and Cam Christie's 20. This Clippers team needs to get younger. And at the end of the day, part of the reason I made all these moves as well is because all those players I'm trading, for the most part, have better value than these younger players and can net a stronger return of assets for the Clippers. So that's why I made a lot of those moves, is because a lot of those players can help a win-now mode team right now, which is why that I think it made more sense for them to trade a lot of those guys and to keep these younger players who don't really have as much trade value, besides, I think, Cam Christie. I'm not sure if many teams would be interested in Miller, Sanders, and YKN right now. I do think Cam Christie, with that being said, though, is a player that some teams, even playoff teams, could potentially have an interest in having him as a scorer potentially off the bench. He has a very bright future. I'm very high on Christie. I like what I've seen out of Kobe Sanders this year. I think YKN should definitely get more minutes to this Clippers team. And in the event they make all of these moves, I do think YKN would find himself in the rotation more. And then Jordan Miller has shown some flashes for the Clippers, as a potential scorer. We'll see what the future holds for him. If the Clippers do make a lot of these moves, though, a lot of these guys would get more minutes in the future. And like I noted, the reason why you trade Kawhi Leonard and James Harden and you keep these young guys isn't just because of age. It's also because those guys you're trading can net a better return. And also, these young guys are under contract for cheap deals over the next few seasons. And you never know what these young players can develop into in the future. And it's important to note, established players that are still playing good basketball and are young are very much valuable at the trade deadline every year. And younger players that aren't really as established don't really net as strong a return. And that's makes sense at the end of the day. That's something that probably doesn't even need to be said. But I say that because part of the reason I kept these guys, not just because they're young and on cheap contracts, it's also because I'm not sure how much you could really get back in return for some of these players in a trade. So it may make sense to hold on to them and see what they could develop into. Like I noted, Christie and YKN, I'm very high on. I would love to see them get more minutes for this Clippers team. So now, all in all, let's look at what this Clippers team would look like after all of these trades are made. The Clippers would have their starting lineup would probably be Tyler Herro at the point guard position, Anthony Simons at the shooting guard position, Ron Holland at the small forward position, Tobias Harris at the power forward position, and Isaiah Stewart at the center position. Then as the backups, you'd have Cam Christie as a backup point guard. I know he's probably more of a shooting guard, just like Tyler Herro, but I had to fit these players somewhere in the lineup, and I know basketball is basically positionless nowadays, but I want to make this a depth chart where you have guys at all 5 positions. So as the backup point guard, you'd have Cam Christie. Backup shooting guards, you'd have Kobe Sanders and Jordan Miller. At the backup small forward position, you'd have Jordan Walsh and Simone Fontecchio. At the backup power forward position, you'd have Kristaps Porzingis and Kelly Olynyk. And then at the backup center position, you'd have Nemias Keita and YKN. And just to review a lot of these contracts really quick, there are 5 players that the Clippers would be getting in these deals that are on expiring contracts. And that includes Anthony Simons, Tobias Harris, Simone Fontecchio, Kristaps Porzingis, and Kelly Olynyk. All 5 of those players that the Clippers are getting in these deals will be free agents at the end of this current 2025-2026 season. And then as for expiring contracts at the end of next season, and that's at the end of the 26-27 season, you'd have Tyler Hero, Kobe Sanders, Jordan Walsh, and Nemias Keita all free as free agents after the 26-27 season. And then you'd still have Cam Christie, Jordan Miller, Ron Holland II, Isaiah Stewart, and YKN still under contract for the 27-28 season. So the Clippers lineup would obviously be younger, and then you'd also have draft assets to work with, a lot more than they currently have right now. And these are all the draft picks that the Clippers would add to their arsenal through these trades. And all of the first-round picks are unprotected in these trades, besides the first-round pick swaps, where the Clippers would essentially get the rights to swap picks with these teams. All of the other first-round picks and the second-round picks have no protections on them. So we'll start out with the 2026 Miami first-round pick. The Clippers would also get a 2029 first-round pick swap from Miami. They'd also add in a first-round pick from Boston in 2026, a first-round pick swap in 2030 from Boston, a 2031 first-round pick from Boston, a 2026 first-round pick from Detroit. They'd also add a 2027 first-round pick swap from Detroit. They'd also add a 2027 second-round pick via Brooklyn or Dallas from Detroit. They'd also get a 2027 second-round pick via Detroit. They would get a 2028 first-round pick from Detroit. They would also add in a 2026 second-round pick via Utah from San Antonio, a 2028 second-round pick via New Orleans from San Antonio, a 2028 second-round pick via Minnesota from San Antonio, a 2029 second-round pick via Cleveland from Atlanta, a 2030 second-round pick from Atlanta, and a 2031 second-round pick from the Atlanta Hawks. So all in all, the Clippers would gain 5 unprotected first-round picks, 3 first-round pick swaps that they would have swap rights to, and 8 second-round picks through these trades. So at the end of the day, I see what the Clippers are saying when they say they're going to wait and see how things go and they really don't want to trade Kawhi Leonard and James Harden the way things stand right now. But when you can have potentially 16 picks that you have the rights to, or at least the control of 16 picks, whether or not you take all 16, because some of those first-round pick swaps you may not actually end up using. But at the end of the day, you'll have control over 16 draft picks if you completely give up on this year and trade all of these assets. And that's something that the Clippers should definitely consider. Whether or not they do that, who knows? I don't think they're going to. I think they're going to make a decision to trade for a guy like Michael Porter Jr. and give up future draft picks to the Brooklyn Nets, which I don't think is that smart. I think it's a sunk season for the Clippers right now. They're 6-20 in a tough Western Conference, 4.5 games back of the last play-in spot, and they're not playing good basketball, even with James Harden and Kawhi Leonard playing very well. They're still finding ways to lose. This Clippers team is broken right now. I think it would be very smart for them to completely give up on this year, unload all of these assets, and get all of these draft picks back in return, and these young players like Tyler Hero and Ron Holland. I think it would be very smart for the Clippers to do this. As I said, I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to make a trade for like Michael Porter Jr., DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine. They're going to do something along those lines, in my opinion. I don't think they're going to follow what I would want them to do. At the end of the day, a couple weeks ago, I would have said the Clippers should definitely consider DeMar DeRozan. But with each and every loss and the way they're losing, the Clippers just do not have it this year. And I don't think trading for a guy like DeRozan would solve this team's problems. Things are just broken right now for this team. It would make sense to give up on this season and not give up future draft capital. If the Clippers trade for DeMar DeRozan or potentially even Michael Porter Jr., it would be a lot like what the New York Jets did last year when they were 2-4 last year in the 2024 NFL season, and they decided to trade a conditional third-round pick to the Las Vegas Raiders in exchange for Davante Adams. It ends up being a lost season for the Jets after that. You end up winning only 3 more games and finish the year 5-12 with Davante Adams on your roster. And they gave up a third-round pick in a season that was already 2-4. And even though 2-4, you still have some time to figure things out. You have a better chance of figuring things out at 2-4 in the NFL than you do at 6-20 in the NBA, in my opinion. But when you look at it now and the way things went, the Jets threw a third-round pick basically out the window in a season that was probably somewhat already lost. At 2-4, you definitely have some time to still figure things out, and they want to maximize their window with Aaron Rodgers, so it made sense a little bit more in their respect going out and getting Davante Adams than it does for the Clippers to go out and trade for Michael Porter Jr. or DeMar DeRozan, in my opinion, especially where the Clippers are at 6-20. I just don't think it makes much sense. And now in hindsight, it didn't make much sense for the Jets to trade for Adams. But at the same time, they were only 2-4. Adams is a really good friend of Aaron Rodgers. And Adams maybe could have been the potential spark that that Jets team needed to go on a run. With where the Clippers are at right now, though, at 6-20, and the way they've been losing these games, and the way they've been playing, and the way they've looked defensively, the way they've looked rebounding the ball, the way they've looked scoring the ball, this team is struggling in every respect. I don't think any trade that they can make for a player like MPJ or DeMar DeRozan would solve this team's problems. I think it would make sense for the Clippers to punt on this season, hold on to the current draft picks that they have, which there aren't too many that they actually have control of, but hold on to the ones they do. I would not mortgage the future anymore for this current team when they're 6-20. And I would move on from some of these players and try to maximize their return by trading them to potential contenders that can win with James Harden, that can win with Kawhi Leonard. It would make sense for the Clippers to do that. It would make the most sense to offload these contracts and get back value in return. I don't see any point in saying, right now, the Oklahoma City Thunder have a top four pick. Oh, no. Let's hold on to Kawhi Leonard and James Harden, and let's make sure they don't get a top four pick. Let's make sure they get a top 10 instead. Well, right now, even with James Harden and Kawhi Leonard playing very well, the Thunder have a real good shot at a top four pick. The Thunder have a really good shot at a top four pick. So it only makes sense, in my opinion, for the Clippers to say, you know what? Let's raise their chances even more of getting a top four pick by potentially waving the white flag on the season in some regards, by trading James Harden to Kawhi Leonard, and let's recoup some draft assets back in return and maybe some young players. And in these moves, the Clippers would have 12 picks that they would have full rights to, 4 first-round picks unprotected and 8 second-round picks unprotected, and then also 4 first-round pick swaps. So that's essentially the Clippers would have 16 picks they would have control over in the matter of 2 months if they made these moves by the trade deadline. And whether or not they do that, who knows? I don't expect the Clippers to make these moves. But these moves are solely what I would do if I were in the position of Lawrence Frank right now as the president of basketball operations for the Los Angeles Clippers. Like I said, I don't expect them to make these moves, but I think it would make a lot of sense to recoup some draft assets, give up on the sunk costs that they've already lost, get some young players back in return, and have some financial flexibility after having some expiring contracts that end at the current season, and then also some expiring contracts that end after next season, and go into the summer of 2026 and the summer of 2027 hungry to go and land a superstar in free agency or via trade and offer them an extension. I think the Clippers are in a better position than I thought. Before I made these trades, I thought we were in a really bad spot. We'd be bad for another 8 years. Who knows if that's the case? That could still end up being the case. You never know at the end of the day. You never know how sports are going to play out or how a game's going to play out. But when I started making these trades, I started feeling a little bit better about where the Clippers are at, because some of these players are still very good players, and I feel like some teams would be willing to give up draft assets and young players in return for James Harden and Kawhi Leonard, for example. Leonard and Harden are both old players, and obviously Kawhi's battled a lot of injuries in his time in LA. But with them both playing well when they're on the floor this season and them not being the problem in LA, they're still very productive players. I could see other teams that are contending right now say, you know what? Let's take a shot at getting Kawhi Leonard or James Harden, and maybe they could take us over the top and be the difference maker in us winning a championship or not winning a championship. So that's the way I feel right now with where the Clippers are at. We'll see what ends up happening. But just to hammer home my main points really quick again, it would make a lot of sense for the Clippers to make all of these moves. Whether or not they end up netting this much of a return for each of these players, who knows? It depends on the team they're trading them to. It depends on the players they're getting back in return. If you're getting a player like Tyler Herro in return for James Harden, you're not going to get as many draft picks back in return, probably. So it depends on the team you're trading to. It depends on what that team has to offer. It depends on where that team's at as well in respect to the playoff race. And it also depends on these contracts of what these players are getting paid. And one thing I want to note, it also depends on if they have player options, which James Harden has a player option for the 26-27 season. So that could hurt the Clippers' potential return in a trade for James Harden, because he could opt out and the team that's trading for him could say, hey, we might only really get 40 games with James Harden. So they may not be as willing to give up another first-round pick, for example, in a trade for James Harden, with a lot of uncertainty about his future contract. As for Kawhi Leonard, he's still on a contract for another full season after this, for the 26-27 season. So There's definitely value there as well. If he can stay healthy, he's still a very good player. And I think teams that are trading for James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, are seeing the play this year, and they're realizing they're really not the main issues in LA. They're still very productive players and definitely all-star level talent. And we can add those guys to your lineup mid-season and maybe be the spark that can help you win an NBA Finals ring. Teams might make that potential risk. And you have to risk in order to gain. With where the Clippers are at right now, the reason they're in the position they're in is because they've risked a lot. And in order to try to win, you have to risk. You have to give up something in order to try to get something. And the Clippers understood that. That's why they made a big-time move landing Paul George, because in order to get Kawhi Leonard in free agency, they had to land Paul George in a trade. So they were willing to make a big-time risk and trade 5 first-round picks, 2 pick swaps, and SGA in a trade to land Paul George. And one of those first-round picks ended up being Jalen Williams. And SGA ended up being a superstar. And at the same time, the Thunder also own, like I said, the 2026 first-round pick of the Clippers. And the Thunder also have swap rights with the Clippers in 2027. So now you look in hindsight, and that was a very tough move for the Clippers to make. And I know some teams are very much wary of trading future draft picks and giving up young talent in trades. But just like I noted, in order to try to get something, you got to give up something. And the Clippers understood that, making a big-time move for Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Did it work out? Now you look back and they didn't get a ring, so it's definitely a failure of an error in that respect. But the Clippers gave themselves a chance to win. And in a lot of these trades that I just mentioned, teams are giving up some players that they can move on from and some draft assets to try to give themselves a better chance of winning. So we'll see what happens. I could be wrong about what these players are valued at in trades. Like I noted, I did all of this for fun, but this is what I would do if I were the LA Clippers. I would try to get younger, get more athletic, get as many draft assets back in return for the players that have some trade value, and then get more financial flexibility for the future so that in the 2026 or 2027 summer, the Clippers can attack free agency or trades and try to land top-tier talent like they did back when they landed Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And it's important to note, with these trades that the Clippers would be making, they'd get 5 unprotected first-round picks, 3 first-round pick swaps, and 8 second-round picks. That would be control over 16 draft picks, nearly triple the amount of draft picks that the Clippers have control over right now. The Clippers only have 6 draft picks, the way things stand right now, that they have complete control over. 3 of their own first-round picks from 2030 to 2032, and we'll see what happens if the Kawhi Leonard situation ends up being true. The Clippers could end up losing those future draft picks. And they also own 3 second-round picks. Memphis' 2026 second-round pick, and the Clippers' own second-round pick in 2031 and 2032. The Clippers have a first-round pick in 2027 and in 2029 that the Oklahoma City Thunder own swap rights to, and then the Philadelphia 76ers own swap rights to, respectively. And then a 2026 second-round pick that the Clippers will end up getting a second-round pick in 2026, but they don't have complete control over that. I believe it's a draft pick from Brooklyn, but there were a lot of certain protections and provisions on that pick, so I'm not really too sure what that will end up being. But all in all, the Clippers only have 6 picks that they have control over. 6. And in these trades, they would be adding control over 16 draft picks, which would be big time. That would be replenishing your draft capital miraculously. And overnight, having a ton of draft picks to work with and financial flexibility to build with in the future. This would catapult the Clippers' rebuild and put them in a better position to win in the future. This year is a lost cause, in my opinion. And that's tough to say as a fan because I love this team. I'm still going to root for them, and I'm going to stay with them even if they're struggling. And I'm still going to try to keep hope that things can turn around. But I think if they're thinking about it from the perspective of we want to be better for the future and have a better chance of contending after we rebuild and after this Kawhi Leonard and James Harden era is over with, I think it makes the most sense to move on from those 2 players and most players on this roster that have trade value and get back as much draft capital and young players and expiring contracts that they can get in return. And like I mentioned, there's only 6 draft picks right now that the Clippers have control over. Their own draft picks from 2030, 2031, and 2032, a 2026 second-round pick from Memphis, which I believe has a slight protection on it, but the Clippers do own that second-round pick. And the Clippers own second-round pick in 2031 and their own second-round pick in 2032. That's it. 6 picks the Clippers have complete control over. The other 3 picks that the Clippers have, they don't have control over. They will get a 2026 second-round pick. I think they own their own 2026 second-round pick technically, but they might get one via Brooklyn depending on who's higher in the second round. There were a lot of provisions on it on fanspo.com. Don't really remember what the exact protections on it were, but the Clippers will get another 2026 second-round pick, but that's not something they just own outright. And the same thing about 2027 and in 2029, the Clippers' first-round picks in those two seasons. They don't own those draft picks outright. Both of those draft picks, they gave up the swap rights to Oklahoma City in 27 and then Philadelphia in 29. So the Clippers put themselves in this position, mortgaging their future constantly, and it's really caught up to them. And honestly, it's impressive it took this long to catch up to them, because after Paul George left in free agency, a lot of people expected that team to really struggle last year in the 2024-2025 season. But the Clippers ended up taking Denver to 7 games in the playoffs and brought back most of the roster heading into this year. Besides Norman Powell, most of that roster from last year was coming back this year. Besides Amir, Coffey, and Norman Powell, those were basically the two main losses, with Powell being the biggest. But people expected the Clippers to continue to contend, and I definitely expected them to be a contender this year in the NBA. I truly did. I thought they were going to be a very good team, and that obviously wasn't the case. The best thing to do right now for the Clippers would be to trade any of their assets that have really good trade value or even some trade value for their expiring contracts and get back draft capital in return. And with these moves, the Clippers would have 16 additional draft picks that they would have the rights to or control over, which would be big time for this franchise. A franchise that right now only has 6 picks that they have control over completely the way things stand right now. And most of those being draft picks that they own of their own from 2030 through 2032. With 3 first-round picks over that stretch and 2 second-round picks over that stretch. But it makes a lot of sense for this Clippers team to kickstart their rebuild and start their rebuild on a high note. I don't think this rebuild is going to be a 10-year window. I think the Clippers can turn things around very quick, and they can do so by kickstarting their rebuild right now and looking ahead to the future. It doesn't make much sense to add a player like DeMar DeRozan or Zach LaVine or even Russell Westbrook or Malik Monk or Michael Porter Jr. when the team is 6-20 overall. It makes sense to move on. I had high expectations for this team. I thought this team was going to be a contender of the Western Conference. And it's tough to give up on that after just 26 games. But when you're 6-20 overall and you're really struggling and the Clippers aren't playing good basketball in any facet of the game right now, it makes sense to move on and restart and kickstart that rebuild right now. So we'll see what happens. Anyways, that'll wrap up this episode. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to listen to this. As always, I appreciate it. I hope you guys have a good one, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Thank you.